So I put this up because we were talking about birds. So take a look at this, and what kind of problem do you think happened to that lettuce? Goldfinches have... No, it's white. It's Agrabon. It's white fabric. And you can get it in different weights. So it can be really light, very light. And you use that for, like, I would use that as a row cover inside my greenhouse. Or you could get a heavier weight, or you could use the light stuff in the summer when you're trying to protect from insects. The heavy one is for frost protection. So there's different weights, but it comes in a little folded blanket and you can open it up. And it lasts a long time, so long as you don't, as you fold it up and don't let the mice get into it, because they can make holes in it pretty quickly. So when the sunlight can go through and the rain can go through. So you can have it on, but if you want to give your greens a little more light, you can pull it down. I had the same 50-foot pieces for like 10 years. We took care of them. They get a little dirty or whatever, but we had a little greenhouse. You can see it up there. My husband made it out of awnings, restaurant awnings. You know, the things that go over. So you put two of them together, and he put it on a concrete little foundation. And so that was my first greenhouse. No, that was my second greenhouse. But that was a pretty good start. You know, it's just a little thing. And I would have my tomato plants in there, and it would be going to be 32 degrees or a little bit less. I would take that Agrabon out, cover everything inside the greenhouse. It wasn't heated. One or two or three layers, and the next day come in and uncover everything as the sun came up. I didn't. We just put them on top of the plants. It's very light. Agrabon. Yeah. So I wanted to go back to the gophers because a lot of people came up to me and said, we have voles, we have whatever. It's all in the same. So many people have this problem. And she had a solution that she had learned.
This is, yes, moles. So the fellow that did our soil test in here, Lynn Hoag, in his material, he has a nice picture. I didn't have one, but you take a PVC pipe, and actually you would put a T in the middle of that, and you would want a cap for that T. I think it's probably 1 1/4 pipe, maybe a little bigger if you're dealing with something bigger. But then you take oatmeal and mix that with, the word just left me. No. You want it dry, plaster of Paris. You mix it with plaster of Paris, and I think it's 50-50. And then you put that down inside that pipe and place that pipe, open up the hole where the voles or the gophers are running through, and, you know, make sure that the hole's open there, and the T comes up so you can find the location, and you put the cap on there, and you can come back and refill it. But they'll go for the oats, and they take the oats with the mixture of plaster of Paris. It hardens in their stomach, and it kills them. So it's not a poison, but it's an effective way. And right, I don't think, yeah, and they usually don't eat the digestive portion anyway. The cats usually discard that. The other thing is gophinator traps. I found a good price on Trapline. They were selling two for like $16. So I personally haven't used them, but someone told me try these traps. And I don't think they're really that difficult. Maybe look it up and look on YouTube or something and see if you can find out what it's like to set them. Yeah, so it'd be, you want the pipe will lay horizontal in the ground, and the T is between, and then the little leg of the T goes upright. Yeah, and then you'll want a little, usually the cap is just a little plastic piece that'll just keep the rain out of it, and then you can also locate it and fill it again or whatever. So. I think he had this for gophers, but I don't know if it may. Something to attract them, yeah.
You can probably look it up online.
Yeah.
So for deer, just wanted to mention this product. It's called 10X Fence, and Dysingers use it on their strawberry field. It hangs down and it's a netting, but the deer can't see it. And you can pull it up and mow under it. It doesn't have to be, you know, a fencing that's solid. So if you're wanting to be able to pull it up and mow, it's kind of nice that way. But you can put it really high. I just wanted to mention that one. 10X. T-E-N-A-X. Fence. Rabbits? Are you talking about the Agrabond or the... Oh, that's kind of... You put it up like as if it's a fence around. I don't think it's... I think the holes are too big for rabbits. Yeah. Okay, on to diseases. Seek divine insight. Observe diligently. Look for comprehensive solutions. Fungi. The waxy cuticle of the leaf surface is the primary defense against fungal infections. All forms of spray can damage this cuticle. Bacteria requires an opening to infect the plant. So an injury, a natural opening, or an insect bite out of the plant is how the bacteria will infect it. Viruses. The symptoms are their names. Yellow virus, mosaic virus, ring spot, dwarf, leaf curl, wilt. So those are some you can look for. It requires an injury to infect it, and that is commonly caused by insect. And when you suspect a virus, when in doubt, pull it out. Don't compost it. Viruses then can be transported to your compost, to your garden, to back to your new plants. So always, if you think you have a virus, get rid of it. When I was digging dahlias this spring, I saw 3 different tubers that looked a little odd. And I said, I wonder if that's the gall virus, and I didn't keep them. I threw them straight into the trash can. The tuber looked fine. It just had these little green things coming off of it, and I was like, I don't want to keep that around.
Your tomatoes can stress in the summer, and the leaves can curl, and that doesn't necessarily... So if it's, you see a leaf curl, it may take time to research it because it may just be that they're... if it's hot or the water's less, or when you prune them back, they'll sometimes do that, especially the lower leaves will curl. Leaf curl on peach trees is copper deficiency. And we didn't really talk about this, but Lynn uses the sea solids or the seawater. And you can get sea solids from him. It's just, I think, a couple tablespoons to like 2.5 gallons of water. And you do a leaf drench. I had a nectarine tree that was dying, and it had been, and I drenched that summer. It put out new growth. I did actually lose it later, but you can do that earlier on for the leaf curl. Or he can tell you where to get it. He may have some with him.
He did last year. And a little goes a long way. Okay, for disease management, water, this is the key to management. Too much water will cause it to break out worse, not enough water. So consistent water patterns and enough, deep enough, but not flooding is good. Soil drainage is important. We talked about that in our very first lesson. Irrigation methods, so overhead watering in areas where you might get a blight on your tomatoes is not a good idea. You don't want to wet the leaves of the tomatoes any more than they get from the dew and the rain. Overhead protection is one way to manage things. So having a hoop house or something over top, high tunnels. Weed control. Weed control is very important. You're going to have more bugs that bring in more viruses and more diseases if you have a lot of weeds. Insect control. So we talked a lot about insects, and that's a challenging one. A comprehensive soil analysis and amendments can greatly reduce the frequency of common nutrient deficiencies in plants. So, I'm not sure. I must have just skipped over this, but I wanted to talk about blossom end rot. You know what that is? Anyone know what blossom end rot is? Tomatoes, what else? Peppers, summer squash, eggplant. Less on the eggplant, but most on the tomatoes, for sure. You have a perfectly beautiful tomato, and you go to pick it, and you realize the very end is black or brown. And then, or you pick a perfectly good tomato, and you take a bite, and the end is black on the inside. That is blossom end rot, and that is a deficiency of calcium. It's really not a disease. It's a calcium deficiency in the fruit. There could be a lack of calcium in the soil, but often the problem is in the uptake and transport of calcium to the fruit. There's calcium in the soil. I put it there. I know I did. I do every year. And yet, there's certain varieties of tomatoes that I just bank on it. I'm going to have some blossom end rot on my Tyrann tomatoes, the very first ones. But it's worth it to me to wait a little bit to get those tomatoes. Those are the Romas that are this big and just perfect. I had shown a picture of it earlier. They are good tomatoes, and I think it's worth losing a few at the beginning of the season. You throw them away, you can't can them or anything. So stressors such as waterlogged plants from too much rain you can't really control, or cold soil, or over-fertilization of nitrogen, or damaged roots can interfere with the transportation of calcium. So that's why the first fruits are the ones that are going to be most susceptible to calcium deficiency. It's not that the calcium's not there. It's just not getting from the plant or the ground to the fruit. I use gypsum usually, but you can use lime. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you can do is you can spray your plants a calcium right on it, but you're still going to lose a few probably until the weather stabilizes. That first spring where, I'd like to get my tomatoes out early. It'd just be so nice, you know. And so you do everything you can, but the temperatures are fluctuating. The rain is coming down in torrents and your plant is in stress. Or you transplanted and the roots were root bound and it's struggling because you had to cut some off or something. So, just wait. I mean, that's what soil testing is for. You can find out if you have enough calcium in your soil. But avoid over fertilization with new nitrogen, or it'll send all the calcium to your leaves and not to the fruit. So, there are certain varieties that don't do blossom end rot as much, but I have my favorites, so, you know, I'll put up with the problems. Do I talk about mildews?
If you've ever seen your garden plants covered with a white, dusty flower, you know immediately that you've had the start of mildew. And you probably, no one has had to tell you what it is. You can just kind of see it there, and it comes on, and then it moves through. It's a fungal disease usually spread by the wind. It thrives in warm weather, and humidity can encourage it. You won't see it in very hot weather. We usually start to notice it by the end of the season in our flowers and even in weedy patches of the field. It is at the end of the season we just cut the plants down and remove them. It only began to show itself the week before the frost came last year. So proper consistent watering and probably a lot of cooperation. I'm sorry, let me get that again. The weather and the watering and the cooperation of the weather can reverse that. And so when there's less rain, it's going to change a little bit. In the early season, there's a few things you can do. You can treat it early, prune back overcrowding foliage to increase the air circulation, and use organic fungicide when you first see the signs of disease. Mix a teaspoon of baking soda in a gallon of water and spray your plants thoroughly. If it's late in the season, take the plants out. So,
for some farmers and flower farmers, especially when we try to do a second succession. So if you really get mildew in your cosmos, we will have new plants ready to go in the ground very soon when we think it might show up. It doesn't show up much at my place, but on the other side of the mountains where they get a lot of rain, they will have a lot of mildew, and so they'll just succession plant certain flowers for that, or even vegetables. Okay, you want to talk about potato blight, since I have never seen it.
I don't know if I've had it myself either, but I know it's an issue in other regions particularly. The most serious disease threat for potatoes is late blight, and it has a very long name. So it's Phytophthora infestans, a fungus that thrives in moist conditions from about 50 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit. And this disease is aptly named as it strikes in late summer, when the nights are cool and dewy, and when the gardens and the crops are almost done. Late blight, which thrives on live plant material of the Solanace family, potato, tomato, eggplant, pepper, your nightshades, can become firmly established very quickly, destroying a crop in just 3 to 5 days. That's really fast. To control late blight, plant clean, disease-free seed. Infected seed is a prime source of inoculation, enabling the disease to get established early in the season. So that's where it is good to get your potatoes from a quality source. Yeah. Ensure that all controls are present on the leaf surfaces throughout the season. Develop a spray schedule to accommodate local weather. Check with your certifier for approved products and further assistance. Several commercial products are effective. Is that part of this list? Yes. Okay. So the sources would be Champion WG. This is a product containing copper hydroxide, a very effective control when it is applied to the plant before exposure to the late blight pathogen. Begin spraying when the plants are 6 inches high, and follow the spray schedule by your extension, as your extension service would recommend. Serenade is another one. It's made from the bacteria Bacillus subtilis. Serenade colonizes the leaf surface, preventing the disease organism from finding a spot to invade. And then Actinovate, that's how it's spelled, made from Streptomyces lucidius. Actinovate also colonizes the leaf surface, preventing the disease organism entry. So, sounds like a comprehensive thing to do some more learning on. I haven't gotten into that much. But
hopefully you don't have potato blight. That's just, yeah. Okay. Butter and honey shall he eat, that he may know to refuse the evil and choose the good. Tasting the good, the bad will become obvious. Where there is a deficiency, something good is needed to fill it. Okay. All right, we're going to move on to extending the season. So, these are my granddaughters in our flower farm. Extending the season. That's actually me carrying the greens out of our greenhouse in the winter. This greenhouse is not a heated. These are all vegetables that we picked January, December. This is a cold greenhouse. It has the proper structure of a greenhouse. It has two plastics with air in between, blowing with a fan. And it's able to withstand piles of snow, as you'll see. And we don't actually heat it. So that's why we would use the Agri-Bond to cover things inside in the winter. And I planted all kinds of Asian greens and all kinds of carrots and things that we could eat all winter. So the trick of it is to plant while it's still warm so that the plants can develop. They need to be able to develop to the point that you could almost pick them. And then when the cold comes, they stop growing. They kind of hibernate. They're there. And you harvest. You need some carrots. They're there. They're already the right length. They're just there. So you pick them and you can eat them, and they are the best, because carrots in the cold have the sweetest flavor. And there are some varieties which lend themselves to this better than others. These peppers are not in the middle of the winter. It's just a picture. That's my daughter transplanting in the greenhouse, and there's little patches of snow outside. This is the Agri-Bond. And yes, you could have nice little hoops and have it hang, you know, not touching your plants, but it's too much work when you've got a lot. So you can see, I think I have 3 layers on there, and they were warm enough. The other thing you can do is put a string of lights under there, like not LED, because those are cold, but warm Christmas lights, like the bigger ones. You string that underneath the Agri-Bond, and it'll give just enough heat to keep the temperatures up, you know, at 3-5 degrees more. So that's a handy thing to remember. This is us taking care of the snow on the outside. That was my old greenhouse in the back. Pretty soon we knew we had to take it out because you couldn't get between them. So you can see that that was a restaurant awning. That's what that was made from. And the snow just kept getting deeper. And you have to be careful, because you could puncture that plastic with the shovel, then the air would blow out, right? So you got to be very, very careful. Vegetables picked from the greenhouse. And you can see how much snow is out there. In fact, we had so many greens that I let people come and pick whenever they wanted to. And there's some people that would come every week and get their salad supply. It's not really going to do a lot, no. And so until February, and suddenly there's enough light and everything wakes up. It is just amazing what happens when you just get a few more hours of light. Suddenly everything's growing.
And this again is where I think this works on most of these greens. But you see the lettuce there again. If you cut those leaves above the crown, don't cut the crown off, but leave the crown. And then when it does grow again, you can cut them several times that way.
Okay. So I didn't water at all in the midwinter. For one, I told you the water's turned off. We blow out all the lines. The other is water freezes and crystallizes, and it would be hard on stuff. So I didn't water. Well, that's when we got the aphid infestation because of the high nitrogen wasn't being washed out. And so I learned that I needed to water when it was warm enough. So winter fluctuates. You have warm spells and you have very cold spells and then you have warm spells. And so during the warm spells, I would bring water down from the house and just water it well. And I never had that aphid problem again. And I would not have connected the dots if I hadn't read it in Elliot Coleman's book. But that's what he said would happen if you didn't water. So, let's see. As the spring progresses, we plant more and more. This is after February, obviously. And we would use every inch of space. The only place you could walk is along the edges of those white boards because all the paths would be full of plants. Everything would be full of plants. And so it's quite a challenge to cover with Agrabond when you can't even step anywhere. And you gotta water it. Besides, this is picked in January. And this is this past November. Now these are not proper greenhouses. These are the Dysinger's, Farmer's Friend caterpillar tunnels. I have two of them. One is a little taller than the other because I bought the kit to make it taller. Because I grow my cucumbers up a string and I like it to have lots of space. So we had our frost October 31 and this is November 6. So we didn't have any time to think about, oh, winter's coming. It came. So I had all these greens in the greenhouse, but sadly, we had to take the plastic off. So I was harvesting as fast as I could while my husband was out there taking the plastic off. And because we get so much snow, the winter before we got like 48 inches in a night and we lost a proper greenhouse, a good solid greenhouse. It had the plastic on it, crushed it. The roof was peaked. It went inverted like this. Washington. What's that? Torch it? No. Yeah, no. I think we melt the plastic, right? Oh, yeah. Well, we went to bed and there was no snow. We woke up and there was 4 feet of snow. Like, you don't even know it's happening. It's quiet and it happens. So, and then this winter we've had over 10 feet of snow. So, and the ski hill is 2 miles from the house. So the little kids have been going there. It's just a little one and then we have several around, but yeah. So they're taking the string off, saving the plastic for next year. It's a challenge. I took this picture from Better Together Farm. That's Alan Seiler's greenhouse. I think that's his sister probably or his wife in the picture. This is how you can have little hoops inside and cover your things and give them more air and more space. I think they do a really good job of that. Protecting their crops. I stole a couple more. This is on the outside of the greenhouse. So these are small hoops. I just want to make sure I'm covering everything. Wire hoops with covers and shade cloth and all of that. There they are covered up. And you use sandbags to hold it down. This stuff can rip, but if you use a heavy enough one, it's pretty good. There's clamps you can buy. There's all kinds of gimmicks, you know. Some of them work really well. Some of them probably don't work that great. Going back to that other greenhouse that I had showed you, this one, you see the two windows at the front and the fan at the back. It was all thermostat controlled. So I could go to church and if it all of a sudden got sunny and warm, I didn't have to be concerned that, oh, I need to run home and open the greenhouse. It'll open by itself and the fan will blow the air through it. Well, we had this one built, well, we got a kit in Oregon, and we had made sure we bought one rated for the snow load. And also because there's two plastics with air blowing between, it's puffed out and it slides very easily, whereas nothing sags on it. And this is cashmere. This is 20 minutes down the road from where we live now. And we had a lot of snow, but not near what we get now. So, either way, both. Mm-hmm. So, you can get the Agribon or the fabric, the frost fabric from Johnny Seed Catalog or various places, greenhousemegastore.com. When they talk about floating row covers, they mean frost cloth, the same. And so it's just different weights depending on what you're doing. Wire hoops and row cover supports. So we have a bender. It's a tool we got on off of Johnny's. It bends conduit. So we can take a straight piece of 10-foot conduit, put it on the bender, and bend it into a perfect arch, and it can go over my, you know, whatever I'm growing outside or inside, either way. Shade cloth is also a season extender. I currently, on my old greenhouse, I had 40%. It was pretty good. This one I have is 50%. When it's 110 degrees and your summer is hot and you never get rain in the summer and it's just blazing hot, the cucumbers and a few, you know, your lettuce and your fragile greens, grow them in the greenhouse under that netting. It's on top of the plastic. I usually put it on mid-May, or by the end of May we have it on. It's called a shade cloth. It's like a netting, and it gives you still get some sunlight, but not as much. And it's not visibly, but noticeably cooler when you walk into your greenhouse. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. It goes over, it fits nicely over your, so we do 30-foot beds. I think it fits over 2 or 4, actually I would say it goes over a 4-foot space. So a little bit of the path with your thing in the middle. Yeah. So if you do shorter ones, that works too. Metal conduit. Right. Yeah, no, that's right. If you're using PVC, then you don't need a bender. It'll bend on its own. Yeah, and you can put in little things at the bottom, you know, a little bit bigger PVC for it to stick into, nailed to a board or something. Stake, yep, there you go. Yes. There's a fan. It's put into the side of the plastic through the inside, but not through the outside. So it's just into the one plastic. It sits there and you plug it in and it blows continuously. It circulates the air in there between the two plastics. Yeah. And it keeps it puffy. Yeah, so the plastic goes over this way, but the ends are not part of that, the very ends of your greenhouse. Yeah. Okay, so we wanted to talk a little bit about cold frames. And I'm going to try and find them.
I have done a small little single layer greenhouse when I was in California, where we just did PVC and a single layer, and that was good. We currently, I was just talking to Jonathan and saying, asking him questions about the tunnels, because where we live, we're kind of where the hills slope off. And so we get a lot of whatever storms come through. We can have 100 mile an hour gusts in the winter with blowing snow, 60 mile an hour in July that'll lay the corn down. It's just, it's unpredictable, but when it comes, it comes. And so we have not yet put up a greenhouse. We think we'll need to do something that's maybe, I want to tell you about this surface on these is called polycarbonate. It's actually, it's plastic and get different widths, but it's cellular that run kind of lengthwise. It's sort of flexible, not really, but it's like your double wall of plastic, only it creates cells, and so it keeps the heat, you know, the warmth. It keeps the heat and the cold. It's this one's cellular, so they have actually little chambers, the upper and the lower, and there's a vertical piece that goes, these little chambers probably half inch long. You may see it a little better when the video plays. So my daughter and my husband made these cold frames, and just this last, we've had them about 8 years or so. We just redid the upper frame because the other one's falling apart. Go ahead and sorry, the sound is, I didn't realize this. It's playing through the projector, yeah. So we have two layers of Agarbond in there, and I'll come and open it a little bit. On the front side, there's two latches because of our wind. We do latch it when we're not, when it's not warm. This aluminum gadget there actually extends like an arm, and yesterday I showed you some where you can actually put a cylinder in there that has, in the summer it has beeswax in it. So when the temperatures warm up to 70, that extender will open on its own. And so these will open up. So I planted lettuce in here in October. Somehow with the amount of moisture, I think the Agarbond absorbed moisture through the tarp below. So I have lost some of the lettuce. There's a little bit of tatsoi there. There is some lettuce, and in a few weeks it will start to, it's been there since October, but it'll start to grow up a little bit more. But these are very handy. One winter I planted lettuce in October, and by March I was starting to bring in, you know, baskets of lettuce, and then in a few weeks later, all of a sudden I had so much lettuce I took it to the neighbors because it just did well. Then I have another video, so I don't know if this one's going to sound the same. It was kind of windy that day.
In the summer, we were down to 6 degrees, minus 10, and we're getting some fresh crops here.
She's saying she direct seeded them back in July, and then didn't end up digging them. And so she was finally digging their carrots and beets.
That was very, very well formed. This one broke off, but trying to get them out.
Sometimes, yeah. The cats have done a pretty good job, or I don't know, the Lord took care of them this last year. I thought they were moving in last summer, but we were pretty happy with this. We have kind of heavy clay soil, and so these came out without really breaking, and they hadn't split, you know, where you get looks like arms and legs on your carrots. And then when we took them in and cleaned them, they were so sweet. And biting into them, they weren't woody. They were almost buttery. I was really surprised at the consistency of those carrots. So, we've had a little fun with those cold frames. I'd like to do more. You know, when I go home, I'm thinking to plant some more lettuce and get it back in there as it warms up. But the vent openers are called Univent, automatic vent and window openers. And Johnny's carries those too. I should say the cold frame instructions are in Elliot Coleman's books. I think it's Four Season Gardening is where his cold frame instructions are.
So, my tunnels come from Farmer's Friend, and they have a booth here. We really like them. It's not a greenhouse. But they're not too hard to put together. My girls, actually, my 22-year-old daughter and her little friends that she was mentoring who helped her in her flower farm, 16-year-olds, three of them. So the four of them together put up these hoop houses for me. I have the Gothic caterpillar tunnel. That's the one that goes like this. The one they set up over there is completely round. But because of the snow, we thought we could do this. But as it turns out, we get too much snow. So we can't actually leave the plastic on. Caterpillar tunnels are often viewed primarily as a season extension tool, but that's only half the story. Covered growing spaces provide year-round protection for your plants from things like rain, pests, frost, and heat when using a shade cloth, wind, and even from being dirt from being splashed on your plants in a heavy downpour. That comes from the Farmer's Friend website. So, it's really covering up the speaker. Well, may God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. Genesis 27:28. We've had a wonderful 3 days, and I think we've covered all the material. We're ending a little early, so if you have any questions, we have time for a few questions. If you don't have any questions, that's fine. Yeah, so that is a different type of raised. Yeah, you're raising up the soil for a certain purpose. A raised bed with wood sides, you're generally bringing soil in from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. If it's your path or along the edge of your driveway, I don't think it matters. Yeah, I actually have. I bought something called Axle, and it's made from vinegar and a few things. It's non-toxic, but I only am using it in places like around the vineyard. I have the vineyard mulched, but all around the vineyard, the weeds want to get crawling up and over, and so I'm, you know, along the road. Yeah, so I'm not doing it in my garden, but just, you know, on the outside, it's vinegar. Yep. Oh, you're kidding. The government wants us to register our gardens. Yeah. Star thistle. I don't have star thistle. Where do you come from?
We have star thistle in the heritage. That's a challenge.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, if it's just a bare area, you may have to spray it with something a little more. Because mowing it, it just gets shorter and shorter, and then it still puts out its seed heads. So, yeah. I don't remember what else we used to do with it, but yeah, that might work. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, a flame. Well, if you can do it before it's dry. Yeah. Yes. briefly, I think we did.
Saving seeds. So you would need to save from your like heirloom or open pollinated plants. You can save the seeds from an F1 hybrid, but it's not going to be the same thing. So anything that is heirloom or open pollinated, it means that when you grow your tomato, you take the seed, you replant it, it'll be the exact same type of tomato. If you plant a hybrid, you don't know if it's going to be like the mother plant or like the father plant. So you can. No? So tomatoes are fairly easy. I mean, fairly easy. They're messy and you can save the seed. But there's certain things in the garden that, like squash. I plant, say, 6 types of squash, and I think, oh, this one is really good. These banana squash are really good. I'm going to save these seeds. Huh. Unbeknownst to me, it's cross-pollinated so badly that when I plant it, I don't recognize it when it's a squash, all right, but it's not anything I've seen before, and it usually often doesn't taste as good as the original. So it's unless you separate them far enough apart, I mean, even growing corn, you don't grow different types of sweet corn in the same field. You grow one kind because they'll cross-pollinate and then mess up the flavor completely, and it won't be as good. Yeah. I think it's like, it's far. No. The tomatoes, I think, is less likely to happen with the tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's fine. If you're saving your seed, you might want a little space. But I think even tomatoes, they don't cross-pollinate a lot. They pollinate, like, so when I was a kid, one of my very first jobs as a little kid that my mother had us do was to go in the greenhouse with a fertilizer, right? Like, yeah. So it's a little buzzer, and you push the button, and zzzz, and my sister would carry the battery, and we would trundle down all the rows, up and down, and every branch of tomato flowers, you put the little buzzer under, and you bzzz, and the pollen would get all over itself within those flowers or drop down a little bit, but you're just pollinating those flowers. You move on to the next one, and you do it twice a day for all summer long. Ask me how I know. For a nickel. I don't think I got a nickel. We got a popsicle and a swim. Yes, you don't even have to wait till next season. Most vegetables, you'll see it in the second season. So the squash seeds from this year planted next year look different. The corn, it's this year's corn that's going to be affected. So only plant one kind. It is tricky. Yeah. But I do, like, I saved some marigold seeds and cosmos seeds and zinnia seeds. I don't know if they'll be exactly what was there before, but they'll still be good, you know? So, yeah. Oh. She's fessing up. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know a lot about figs. I have one plant. It dies every year to the ground, and then we start over. It gets this big, and then winter comes again. So, yeah. No, I have no idea. I can't really tell you what to do with figs. Yes. Proper way to store seeds. I put them in Ziploc bags. You can double bag them or single bag. And you can put them in the freezer or in a cool place. So I have mine actually in the shed, which is at about 40 degrees, 40, 50. Yeah, all the seeds. So they're giving away packets of seeds there. You put them in a Ziploc bag and you store them in a cool place. No. Well, all your instructions are on the package. You want that. But that's why Ziplocs work really nice. Yeah, so mine go in a Ziploc and I write all the names, alphabetical order, plastic lid. So, or you can bag them, double bag them. Put them all in a Ziploc and then put them in a big Ziploc together. Paper bag is going to let more moisture in and out. And while they need some air, like you don't want to vacuum pack them and you don't want to, what was it that somebody asked?
Yeah, you don't want to vacuum pack them because you don't want to press all the air out because they're living. And so they do need some air circulation, but just in a bag and close it, there should be enough. It's, yeah. And double, they were saying double bag is good. And, or, yeah. Yeah. And then that way your shelf life is longer. You can get charts that will explain what seeds, how long each seed, type of seed is usually good for. But when you freeze them, if you're careful like that, and also when you're planting, if you take all your seeds out with you in a box and you let them sit in the sun all day long while you're planting, that can impact them. So try to keep just what you need with you and, you know, change them up so that you're not exposing them. Or if you get water on your packets because you're watering the, you know, those kinds of things, just pay attention to it a little bit. Also, if you're wanting to grow certain things, you might consider, okay, I want to save seed from this variety. Just grow that variety, you know, one year, and the next year you can grow another one. And then your seed, if you freeze it, it will keep longer, so then you can circulate things that way. Yeah. Yes, but you do want to make sure that they're dry. Yes, they need to dry. I take paper plates when I take melon seeds or whatever it is, rinse them, and then let them dry on a paper plate, and I put them, you know, on a shelf somewhere. Tomatoes need to be, there's something on the seed hull, and you need to let the tomato ferment. So you can kind of squish it up, put it in a jar for three or four days, and it needs to have this white foam on it for a while, and then you rinse that off, and then you can spread those seeds out and let them dry. It needs a little bit of air because you don't want it's a white mold, but it's a special process that the tomato does that, yeah. No, that's part of it. It'll help it germinate in the next year. Yeah. I took some last year from some varieties I wanted to keep, and I didn't have time to deal with them. I had to be gone. So I took them, I put them in some jar, I mushed them up, put them in some jars in the back of my refrigerator with the lids just a little bit loose. I think I left them for a month, and I came back and then cleaned them up, and they grew. So.
Well, why don't we have a little prayer? Thank you all for coming. Father in heaven, thank you for the time we've had learning together. May you bless us now as we enter into the Sabbath soon. And may we be prepared to spend time with you. In Jesus' name.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.